This is the second podcast on risk. I just want to introduce very briefly indeed some of the types of financial risk which are important in the world which we're going to be considering in the law of finance. The most important type of financial risk, I would suggest, is systemic risk. Systemic risk is the risk that the entire financial system will fail. Now, for a lot of people, and I've been writing about financial risk in the form of systemic risk for a long time, talking about it for a long time, a lot of people have thought this was some kind of nuclear option that was never actually likely to happen. A lot of trade associations always purported, like the International Swaps and Derivatives Association, to be dealing with systemic risk, or that was their purpose, to try and control systemic risk. Well, in 2007 through 2009, particularly with the failure of Lehman Brothers in September 2008, we did see systemic risk come nose to nose with us all. The risk is this. Financial markets are so interconnected. All of these investment firms, the big banks, the big financial institutions, deal with one another so frequently. They have so many transactions with one another out there in the marketplace that if one bank were to fail, every other bank would, some banks more than others, but every other bank would bear a risk, therefore, of not being paid what they're owed by that failed bank, and also being required to make payments to that failed bank. In other words, there becomes a risk that other banks will be forced into bankruptcy as well, because the first failed bank will drag everyone else down with it. Now, with the fall of Lehman Brothers, this became a very, very real problem. Lehman Brothers fell, the largest bankruptcy ever, a loss that's estimated about $600 million, and with a huge notional amount of transactions left outstanding, which other banks were forced to try and settle between themselves in the aftermarket after Lehman fell. If it hadn't been for national governments like the US, like the UK, happened in Germany, happened in France, happened across the world, it's likely that the entire financial system would have failed, because without public funds capitalising those banks, they simply would have been unable to raise any money from anywhere to pay their debts as they became due. And this is the problem with banks not actually having any money. If you're an efficient bank, you've invested every last penny and cent. You don't have any cash left at the end of the day if you're efficient. You have invested it all. You have loaned it out. You have bought securities with it. But when you then end up in a market where you can't sell your securities, where you can't borrow any more money, you as a bank simply cease to exist. So that's systemic risk. And that is the risk that's at the background, always. And regulators now more and more are becoming very alive to the idea they have to look to the integrity of the financial system generally and not just at the individual health of any individual bank. And nor can we just be focusing on a jurisdiction by jurisdiction basis, because all these financial markets are interlinked. And when banks fail, that has a direct effect on the real economy. Neither you nor I may have had any interaction with Lehman Brothers, but the failure of Lehman Brothers impacted on the banks we bank with, impacted on the firms from which we hope to get our pensions when we retire. Everything is linked there. It's an extraordinary and slightly scary matrix. It seemed like a scary matrix in 2008. We have market risk, the risk simply that markets will fold. The risk, as we saw in the recent financial crisis, that you may not be able to get a price for an individual security. Whereas you might have thought a particular share was worth 100 on day one, on day two after a crash you might not find anyone that wants to buy it from you at all, at which point its value might as well be zero. Market risks can also be the risk that a market might simply fail to trade for an hour or so. There might be some ruction on a particular marketplace. That could be
result of a coup, that could be the result of a power failure, who knows. So a market risk at that level could be an ongoing systemic failure of a market, or it could be a temporary blip. How do we cope with that risk? Counterparty credit risk is absolutely key. The risk that the other party to a transaction with us simply fails to perform their obligations. Linked to that is collateral and credit support risk. When you're dealing with a counterparty, you may well have taken a guarantee from somebody else, or you may have required your counterparty to provide you with some assets to which you can have recourse in case they don't perform. What happens if something goes wrong with that transaction and you can't get at those assets? That's a risk as well. Insolvency risk generally, what if your counterparty goes bankrupt? Or, as with a number of institutions in the recent financial crisis, not they necessarily go bankrupt, but they end up in some sort of financial trouble which makes bankruptcy look likely or makes bankruptcy look possible. What if something goes wrong which indicates to you that insolvency is a problem down the line? Well-drafted contracts will allow you to get out of those contracts, not just when someone goes bankrupt because it's too late by then, but lets you get out of the contract at some earlier date when things look like they're about to go wrong. So that's a risk which needs to be catered for, needs to be dealt with in contracts. Payment risk. The risk you don't get paid. The risk that the market through which you're expecting payment isn't open on a particular day. Have you understood that the market in one jurisdiction might not be open on the day you expect to be paid? What if it's a bank holiday in the jurisdiction through which payment is to be made? Documentation risk. There's a great risk in the derivatives markets, for example, where a number of huge financial institutions for a long period of time had been, and some of them still are, dealing without contracts in place. They do a huge volume of transactions on a daily basis, but they just don't have the time to put contracts in place in writing between the trade being done and the trade expiring. Some of these deals are very, very quick indeed. Now that means that the only possible contract is the oral discussion between the traders. And what if the legal question which arises is something which the traders haven't discussed? Traders aren't lawyers. Why would they know about the detail of tax law or the detail of the need to identify governing law to control the law of your contract if you're doing it across borders? All these sorts of things can easily be left up in the air. So there are real problems there about not having documentation. What happens if your documentation is drafted in year one and a contract is executed, but then in year 10 the law changes so that a provision of your contract ceases to have the effect you thought it had before? There's another documentation risk. If your documentation expires in terms of its usefulness. Another risk, personnel risk. We've got very concerned about the financial crisis in 2007-2009 and worried about what happens if the whole market folds, but there's always been a problem of individual personnel, the so-called rogue trader problem. What happens if you have someone like a Nick Leeson who is doing something which is illegal by the laws of the jurisdiction through which he's dealing and starts to fraudulently create false accounts to cover trading losses? And these losses build and build and build until when they're finally exposed to the light, we then realise that, like Barings Bank, the entire institution is actually bankrupt. So personnel risk is a very great problem. The human beings involved. At the more micro, less sinister end, we simply have the so-called fat finger problem with traders, where we have traders who accidentally mistype the transaction into their computer and into the bank's records. Now what happens there when we suddenly end up one day realising that there are two different understandings of the contract out in the world, one which will make money and one which will lose? So documentation risk, personnel risk, huge problems. Regulatory risk. The risk of regulators changing their policies, changing their actions. Again, if you've organised your business in a particular way in year one, What happens if the regulations change later? What happens if the regulators decide they're going to start looking at a different market in a different way? Tax risk, tax laws change regularly, and that can have a huge impact on whether or not a transaction is in the money or out of the money. And 11, cross default risk. You're dealing with a counterparty. You're dealing with them, for example, in derivatives. What happens if your counterparty fails to make a payment under a bond transaction, something entirely different? Now, if they failed to pay up under their bonds properly, that's probably the sort of thing you think of as being a warning, that they might be about to go into insolvent, they might be in big trouble, even though they don't owe you any money, possibly for months to come. You would want, in your well-drafted contract, to make sure that failure under a bond transaction would let you out of your derivatives transaction immediately, so you don't have to suffer that risk of loss. So it's all about risk. Those are just some of the many, many risks which I discuss in various points through the book. The financiers are all about risk, and there's a huge hinterland of risks which are specifically legal risks, and risks which haven't got anything to do straightforwardly with the law, but are still things the lawyers need to get involved with in case they have a knock-on legal effect, in case they have a knock-on tax effect, in case they have a knock-on regulatory effect, so on and so forth. Those markets are constantly innovating. Each new innovation creates new problems, new challenges for a lawyer. And you either think of that as being scary, or you think of that as being fun. End of podcast.